All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to year three. I'm trying to decide where I want to start tonight. I don't really know. I've been, keeping up with your journals, I think, pretty well. Again, probably I have about 95% of it read. There may be about 5% that didn't get read. We're in retreat this week in La Vida. But I still take time every day to read from your journals. So I guess probably where I want to just start is again to ask about your experience. But this time when I ask about your experience, the question is a little more broad than last week. You can just share about your experience of contemplation and that type of thing. But you can also go ahead and share any insights that you're having, anything that's coming to you that seems important, any shifts that you're experiencing that seem important, any frustrations you're experiencing that you want to talk about, anything at all. So anything at all from your experience of gentle healing year three. So is there anyone who would like to share? Okay, Malcolm, go ahead.
Yeah, I feel just by reading the quotes, I feel like I'm just in training with that higher energy field. It's just reading them and then getting with my inner teacher and letting that flow out. Not really specifically, I take some of the bread, the daily bread, and it comes back, and I use that throughout the day. But more so, it's more like a, just like I'm staying connected with that energy field, and that's keeping me expanded, keeping me more in awareness, more conscious of it.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it, that we're in training with that higher energy field. I think that's a great way to describe it. By going over these quotes every day and, again, contemplating them in some way throughout the day. I think a lot can happen this year in gentle healing year three by just sticking with what you're calling that energy field, right? Thank you. Those higher teachings. Does anyone else want to share? Okay, Jay.
Yeah, just appreciating practicing in the morning right when I get up and making that the first thing, and just training my mind to go within and, live that way of just remembering too throughout the day as well, which I'm still working on. I wouldn't say I'm fully there yet because I get caught up in the workday still a lot, but I do stop and review the practice and touch back, so I'm not quite, undoing the steps I'm going forward with constantly. So that's it.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? All right, George.
I am getting better at reviewing the tips throughout the day. I mean, that's, I shared that it's easy to do the lessons. I'm an early riser, so I can usually get it out of the way if I don't get distracted. Sometimes I get distracted before I start, but at any rate, I do enjoy going over the quotes again throughout the day. And so I see an improvement there. That's
great. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to start going over some things that I've noticed this week as I review your journals. But I do want to say that you guys are allowed to kind of pipe in at any time. All right. So as I'm sharing, if there's something that comes up in you to be shared, you can put up your hand or, just when it sounds like I'm kind of taking a pause, say, hey, Regina, this is something I want to say, you know, so feel free. It's great if this is an open discussion. I am, in fact, you'll have to pipe up because I'm going to share my screen, which means I'm not going to notice your hand up because I'll be looking at a shared screen. So you guys are just going to have to unmute yourselves and interrupt me. That's just the way this is going to have to happen. So let me share my screen. And as you can tell, I'm here in the forum. And I also have some notes that I take during the week. So it looks like the first thing I kind of want to look at is Jay on day 23. You can see here I took notes, things I want to go back and look at on quote 23. And I don't remember exactly what it was. So we will go and look at it together. But there was something there I wanted to see. All right, let's find J number 23 right here. In fact, let me go ahead and just read quote 23 for us before we do this. Knowing aright the nature of the self and abandoning the non-self as void, unreal, is wisdom true. All other knowledge is ignorance and not wisdom. And I love that, abandoning the non-self as void, right? Unreal. That's wisdom true, just nothing. All other knowledge is ignorance and not wisdom. So let's look and see what Jay wrote here that I wanted to come back to. No thought is peace. Being is peace. Living as an empty shell is peace. Reading these words is mind activity reminding you to be at peace. But I like that. Of course, I know all of you all are picking up on this, but I like noticing that reading the words is mind activity. It's not actually the peace itself, but it's reminding you to be at peace. Practice. Be willing to abandon all thinking and false knowledge. Drop thinking that any conceptual knowledge is right, because that is just another trick to eventually bring argumentation and turbulence back to the mind. Abandon this. Drop it like it's hot, like a hot potato is what I thought of when I read that. Drop it like it's hot. Watch for arrogance in the mind about false knowledge learned. When this is seen, drop it. See only beauty and wonder in all. Everyone is doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. Okay, maybe it was this story I wanted to read, so let's look at it. I remember once in college, a long time ago, I think it was 1987, and I was a 21-year-old sophomore in the dorms at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. I was one of a few that attended a new thing called A Course in Miracles group and was into metaphysics and spirituality, etc. I really thought I knew something. I lived in the dorms, and one night I was in a friend's room involved in a heated discussion debate on God and truth. This room was situated at the end of the second floor, pretty close to the ground level. This room was one of the large end rooms and had a picture window that faced out into the courtyard. It was raining that night, and it was starting to thunder. I was sitting on the edge of the bed, back to the picture window, and others were in chairs around and a few standing. I recall at one point getting really passionate about a point I was making and said loudly, "And that is the truth," and slammed my fist. I don't have anything to slam it on. Slammed my fist righteously down on the bed, hard. Right then, and I mean right then, a giant bolt of lightning struck the ground right in the courtyard outside the dorm and let out a massive bang. All our eyes went wide. It seemed like an act of God at the time. We were all a bit freaked out at the exact timing of it. It was pretty cool, but it reminds me never to get arrogant in expressing truth. You could be struck down by lightning. Ha ha. But yeah, I want to look back at the quote after reading that now. So number 23, knowing aright the nature of the self and abandoning the non-self as void, unreal, is wisdom true. All other knowledge is arrogance and not wisdom. So what Jay is demonstrating here, and he knows he's demonstrating it here, is that he was pretty arrogant at this point in college when he thought that he was right. And, you know, what the quote is saying is to abandon that non-self, the one who would feel arrogant, the one who would feel right, as void. And I just think that, you know, that Jay's story here, it gives us such a contrast, because we can all imagine the energy that was running through Jay in that moment when he thought he was so right, you know? And if we just imagine that feeling of being so right in a debate, and then contemplate the word void, non-self as void. And there's a really big difference, right? There's a really big difference between that arrogance that I'm right, and that non-self as void, completely void. So I just wanted us just to take a moment, kind of look at that contrast. And again, at any point, if anyone wants to share, please speak up, because I cannot see your hands or anything. I will just pause every now and then to see if anybody wants to share. In fact, it looks like I'm going to go looking for Doreen, number 23. So while I do that, if anybody has anything to share, please do. Okay, Doreen, number 23, this is the same quote. In fact, she quotes it, so we'll just go ahead and look at it again. Knowing aright the nature of the self and abandoning the non-self as void, unreal, is wisdom true. All other knowledge is ignorance and not wisdom. Okay, so inner wisdom. Oh, yeah, I remember this. She says, ignorance gets a bad rap. It simply means there is something not known. It is actually a place of opportunity to open oneself to know. Here's the catch. Many don't open themselves to know, and consciously or unconsciously choose to remain in ignorance. Ignorance was never meant to be a permanent state. I repeat. Ignorance was never meant to be a permanent state. Making it a permanent state leads to degradation and a shriveling of the soul. Ignorance, accepted as a temporal state, is a gift of growth potential. Once you know you're ignorant, once you know, you are presented with another choice. You can choose to know, yet live in arrogance, ignorance. You can choose to know, yet live in ignorance because of fear. This is misery and leads to stagnation and all forms of disease. Or you can choose to accept what you now know, release the state of ignorance, and move forward. For some, this takes great courage, yet this is the choice of growth that leads to true understanding and eternal bliss. And then she writes, Holy Spirit, I am feeling sadness because I'm realizing where I am choosing to live in ignorance. And the Holy Spirit says, the sadness you are feeling is a gradual melting away of your unwillingness. Feel the sadness deeply. This melting is the soothing balm that creates space for your willingness to grow. Keep focus on your willingness, even if it is several degrees away from the ultimate willingness that unleashes the courage in you to face all that you fear. Trust me, your willingness will prevail. And then this photo, she says, flashed as she was writing this post. Your fear of looking stupid is holding you back. I love that. Your fear of looking stupid is holding you back. But I also love the fact that notice that her inner guidance told her to go into the sadness deeply. Right? Didn't tell her she shouldn't be sad. Told her to go into the sadness deeply. And then the way her inner guidance worded it is this melting that happens as you're going into the sadness, what the sadness is doing, this melting is the soothing balm that creates space for your willingness to grow. And the way my inner guidance probably would have said that same thing is, when you go into the sadness, you heal it. And as it heals, it leaves space. And that, and then your willingness will expand into that space. So again, if there's any, yes, go ahead.
This is Doreen.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to share my experience of having written this particular piece of wisdom. I remember feeling the sadness as I remember writing it, and I could feel the energy of what was coming through, and I remember the sadness, and then the guidance to feel it deeply. And after I wrote the quote, I mean, I wrote the writing for this particular quote, I did spend some time to really feel the sadness. And then I kind of moved on. And later that day, I've shared with some people that I'm a doula. I'm a birth worker. I help women who are pregnant and have babies. I just support them. But that evening, one of my clients went through an experience that was very sad. And so I had to witness this choice that she had to make, which was very courageous in a difficult situation. And I got extremely sad that night. And it the sadness stayed with me for a day and a half. And I was talking to a friend about it that night, and it hit me that I was bearing witness to someone. It was this deep sadness was happening on two fronts. It was the whole situation was sad, and I was bearing witness to someone who was very courageous and had decided that she knew that if she stayed in her current situation, it would not be good. Mm-hmm. So she made the courageous choice. And so I witnessed that person move through something so courageous. And so it's almost as if spirit was giving me or showing me what this looks like. And the level of courage it takes to move through something that's very fearful and very difficult.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I very appreciative for that. I have noticed with how some of the writings and some of the wisdom that comes through and how it is creeping into my day, so to speak, like certain things pop up, or like this particular picture, that certain things are showing up to provide further guidance or for something, you know. So I'm noticing that from time, and this one was a big one. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I also want to reemphasize again, because we talked a lot about the last part of this, so I don't want to forget the first part. you know, where she starts off, it's kind of funny, ignorance gets a bad rap. But then she goes on to point out that ignorance just means something's not known. And so what we can do then is commit ourselves to knowing. And of course, as we're learning, we don't mean through intellectually learning, right? In this case, you know, we mean to dedicating ourselves to our inner guidance, dedicating ourselves to our awareness, watching awareness, basically dedicating ourselves to not knowing and allowing it to be shown. And of course, this is why things begin popping up, is because when you allow it to be shown to you, the universe then steps in as the teacher. So thank you very much, Doreen. Let's see, the next thing I wanted to go look at, I just wanted to go look at quote 26. So if you guys have your books, we can just look at quote 26 together. In fact, it looks like I'm going to share a couple of quotes, so maybe I'll quit sharing my screen for a second so I can look at you guys, and I'll come back and share again. So quote 26, those whom from books have learnt about the truth supreme esteem themselves supreme in wisdom and fail to seek the knower and taste the bliss of self, but test and measure the silent sage. What folly this is. And there's really two reasons I wanted to watch this. Probably, let me go over the one that is least important to me. What's least important to me is that they test and measure the silent sage. You know, they judge someone outside of them who is wise and say, you know, for whatever reason, this person is not it. And obviously, I think that one mistake that probably many of us make is judging whether people are or are not enlightened, whether they act or do not act enlightened. And all of that is foolishness. It's really irrelevant to me whether, quote, someone else is enlightened. You know, if my only responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself, it's irrelevant to me. If somebody says something wise, whether they're enlightened or not, if my inner guidance is telling me to listen, then I listen. Whether they're enlightened or not is irrelevant. My inner guidance has pointed that out. If my inner guidance tells me to disregard something, then I disregard it. But judging people as enlightened or not, being concerned about whether they're enlightened or not, is literally a waste of my time. But what was most important to me in this particular quote, those whom from books have learnt about the truth supreme, esteem themselves supreme in wisdom, this part right here, and fail to seek the knower and taste the bliss of self. I think this is really the crux of what some of these quotes are really saying to us. We have spent a lot of time learning, probably each and every one of us has spent a lot of time learning spiritual things, and it's gotten us to this point. All right, so that was its purpose, to get us to this point. But if we are not ready to start seeking the knower, it has been for naught. You know, it has been for naught. Awakening has nothing to do with learning stuff mentally. Not really. We need to commit ourselves to seeking the knower. That's critical. That's important. One of the things we've been doing since Gentle Healing Year One is spending time in meditation. I'm not assigning meditation anymore. I'm leaving it up to you all. But what I see in this quote is, if you're not doing that, you've not yet reached the state of understanding what everything you've learned is all about. Right? Those whom from books have learnt about this truth supreme esteem themselves supreme in wisdom and fail to seek the knower and taste the bliss of self, right? So that's what I wanted to point out about that particular quote. And again, I'll pause and see if anybody else wants to share about that. Okay, then going to quote number 27. Mine is the only mind amenable to my correction. If one forgets this truth and broods o'er others' faults, one only fouls one's own mind more and more. And I know that you all understood this quote because I read your journals and I saw many of you, you know, have clear understanding, but I still wanted to come back and look at it again. In fact, it's that same line that I just quoted from A Course in Miracles, that my only responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. Mine is the only mind amenable to my correction. And to be absolutely honest, my correction is the only thing in this world that's really any of my business. Think about that. You know, my own awakening is the only thing in this world that is really any of my business. You know, what spiritual students do a lot. In fact, it seems like I just taught this recently somewhere. Maybe it was in the Sunday gathering. Is get distracted by the outer, get distracted by the politics, get distracted by, you know, the whatever's going on wherever, the conversations that we're in with other people, you know, get distracted by. And the truth is, the only thing that's any of my business is my own awakening. And again, the way A Course in Miracles describes that is something like forgiveness is my only function or something like that. But when you go further and deeper, which is what we've done now because we're in Gentle Healing Year 3, A Course in Miracles is Gentle Healing Year 1. We're really getting to the point where awakening is the only thing that's any of my business. Does anybody else have anything they want to say about that before I continue? All right, let me look at my notes, see what I wanted to do next. Looks like I wanted to go to Julieta from post 25 to 28. So let me share my screen. We'll go back into the forum. Let me find Julieta. Here she is. Good thing there's not 100 of you guys. It'd take forever to find something. last week. 25 to 28. Let's see what there was here that I wanted to look at. Okay, so inner teacher, concentrate on your healing. You've got enough on your hands with that. That fits very much with my healing or my awakening is the only thing that's any of my business, right? Concentrate on your healing. You've got enough on your hands with that. When you think you should help someone, do so by redoubling your dedication to your own practice. I repeat, when you think you should help someone, do so by redoubling your dedication to your own practice. Come to me immediately. Immediately. I love that. Come to me immediately for my wisdom. When you feel an urge to correct someone, isn't that great? Come to me immediately for my wisdom. When you feel an urge to correct someone, especially when you also sense that familiar, subtle discomfort in the heart, notice your temptation and instead drop into the heart and be with me. You may be asked to just listen. While silently sending love and knowing that all is well. You've already seen in manifold situations that your solo attempts to help were not well received. Have a chuckle about that and change. I love that. Have a chuckle and change. And remember how threatened you felt until relatively recently by things to do with Ramana Maharshi and non-dualism. You weren't ready to hear them. So let's focus on getting that log out of your own eye first. And many of you referenced that particular Bible verse when you were writing on these quotes. Let's focus on getting that log out of your own eye first. And don't worry Your lack of intervention is not going to hurt or prolong suffering in anyone. I've got this. Do you hear that? The universe, Holy Spirit, I've got this. So I think that's what I wanted to share there from those particular quotes. Is there anyone that wants to say anything before I move on? And it looks like the next thing I've put right here in my notes from Teresa's post, she quoted Adya Shanti. I love this. Listen to this quote from Adya Shanti. There is more sacredness in a blade of grass than there is in lofty spiritual teachings. There's more sacredness in a blade of grass than there is in lofty spiritual teachings. And I remember once several years ago, back when I lived in North Carolina, I was actually trying to understand A Course in Miracles at the time. And one of the things A Course in Miracles does a lot is talk about your creations, but it never actually tells you what your creations are. And so one day I asked the question, what are my creations? And inner wisdom asked me to go outside, select a blade of grass, and lay down and look at that blade of grass until I knew the answer. And I did that. I went outside. It was a nice day. I laid down in the grass and I picked a blade of grass and I looked at that blade of grass. And what I understood after spending some time with the blade of grass was beingness as the essence. Beingness. You know, so beingness itself was the answer to the question. That's what our creations are. They're beingness. But it's also, you know, beyond that, that was trying to understand the theology of A Course in Miracles. That's the reality of what everything is, beingness. And so when Adya Shanti says, let me find that quote again, there is more sacredness in a blade of grass than there is in lofty spiritual teachings. He's really saying that beingness is what's sacred. Not all of that knowledge, not all of that learning. And you know what's amazing is every one of us can not know a thing, right? We don't have to learn a thing to just be aware of our beingness, to just be aware of the beingness around us and everything else, right? So I thought that was a beautiful quote, and I want to say thank you to Teresa for sharing that. Anything from anyone else before I continue? All right, then the next thing I wanted to look at was quote number 29. So if you have your books, we can look at that together. One has to blame oneself alone if one should try to teach the truth supreme to those who are immature. These might reject the highest truth as false because it contradicted what they had been told before and had believed as true. And I know, again, I know you all understood this quote because I read what you wrote. Many of you referred to the scripture about, you know, where Jesus talks about don't throw your pearls before swine. But there's something else in this quote that I think that we want to look at, which I'm going to call it kind of indirect, where it says that those ones who are immature might reject the highest truth as false because it contradicted what they had been told before and had believed as true. That's actually something we want to be careful about in ourselves as well. As we progress and as we begin contemplating, you know, these highest teachings, as Malcolm pointed out, in, you know, this high vibration of teaching, we want to make sure that we aren't testing what we're coming into contact with against what we were told before or what we believed before and rejecting it on that basis. Right? That's something we want to be careful for. That's something that humans naturally do. Humans are naturally attached to their beliefs. So again, I don't know what your spiritual backgrounds are. You know, obviously I started with A Course in Miracles, and you know, there are things that I learned in A Course in Miracles that fortunately I have long since forgot. But at one time, when those things were fresh in my mind, I would have tested every single thing in this book against my intellectual understanding of A Course in Miracles. And if it didn't fit, I would have rejected it. Now, A Course in Miracles itself says that it's just a beginning, right? A Course in Miracles is to get us started on this path. So if I go rejecting these literally highest truths based on what I learned in kindergarten, I'm going to stay in kindergarten. So one thing we want to learn is everything we have learned up until this point was like a stairway that we've been climbing. In fact, let me use another example. Think of monkey bars. If you're going to go across monkey bars, one thing you have to do is let go of this monkey bar behind you in order to reach in front, right? If you keep holding on to this monkey bar, you're not going anywhere, right? You have to let go and move on, let go and move on. So let's make sure we don't make this immature mistake. You know, we are moving into higher truths here. There's no doubt about that. And let's be open to them and not cling to our old ways of thinking. We can misunderstand what's in these quotes if we're trying to find what we learned before in these quotes. Right? So we want to go to that I don't know mind, that emptiness, and find out what these quotes are trying to tell us as we go through this book. See, the next thing I wanted to look at was Susan Bacon, number 31. So I will share my screen and let's find Susan.
I was just going to say on that, that I learned from David Hawkins that just that things are true on different levels, you know, not to reject anything and also to let go of things that are, just taking like, the way he put things on his scale is very helpful. You know, it's not that they're not true. It's just they're true at the level of which you're looking, and your perceptions, someone's perceptions are, you know, change as they go up the scale of consciousness.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. And that's where I started with the first example going up the stairs. Right. And it's true, you know, I went to the monkey bars, but in order to go up the stairs, you have to step off of the lower stair, right? Step off of the lower stair and keep going up. So, yeah, thank you, Malcolm. Okay, so I forgot what I was looking for in Susan. Let me peek again. I'm looking for Susan's number 31. Here we are, number 31. She says, how easily the mind can walk into the trap of story, where thought begets thought and exaggeration builds upon itself. Life engulfed in the mind becomes twisted, sticky, shifting, and inevitably sweeps the self further and further from truth. I shall pay attention and practice solitude, stillness, clear-mindedness. Whenever self senses the suggestion of thought wanting to build itself a story, intentionally empty of mind, the self is fully aware that the path to real knowledge is not built. It only is. It begins with perfect clarity and simultaneously, without building or creating. It is also ease, peace, and freedom to know the gentle sway of standing still. Let me go ahead and look at quote 31. For those whose mind has not completely subsided, the false knowledge theirs already has only served to pile up sorrows. Gaining more such so-called knowledge only deepens illusion's darkness and helps not life at all. So I think the reason that I came to Susan's is I thought that this was so eloquent in the way she described about how the mind builds the story and traps us in the story. And sometimes it's really helpful to look at eloquence and contemplate it. I loved where she talked about thought begets thought. You know, one thing that I learned a long time ago is if I can let go of a story at the first sentence, I'm much better off. You know, as soon as my mind says, Fred's looking at me funny, that's when to drop it. You know, instead of going into the rest of the story and finding out what my mind has to say about why Fred's looking at me funny. Because the further I go, the more thought I'm going to get. Thought begets thought. And then I love this. And exaggeration builds upon itself. You know, this the mind is exaggerating whatever is being perceived. Life engulfed in the mind becomes twisted, sticky, shifting. Look at those descriptors. You know, and you can look at your own mind and see this is true, that when you get completely engulfed in a story, the mind becomes twisted, it becomes sticky, and it becomes shifting. Right? My mind can argue with itself about why Fred is looking at me funny. Right? And now I'm starting to imagine Fred's talking to Sarah, and Sarah and Fred are both looking at me. You know, it becomes twisted, sticky, and shifting. And then here's the most important part of all. And inevitably sweeps the self further and further from truth. So for those whose mind has not completely subsided, right? The false knowledge, which is whatever I perceive and believe, already has only served to pile up sorrows. But I thought this was a very good description of how that happened. So thank you, Susan. And again, if anybody has anything they want to share, please jump in. And I'm going to Rayla, quote 33. I wonder if I overlooked Rayla. Yeah, page 4 is mainly people who haven't posted in a while. Let's look again. Oh, there she is. I did overlook her. Right there she is on the first page. Okay, so Rayla, quote 33. First, before I read Rayla's 33, I'll go ahead and review 33 for us. All right, so 33. Being alone shines and rejoices as awareness. Hence, till all thought merges in absolute being awareness, the poor conceptual mind can never know true being, supreme awareness. So, Rayla says, when I am alone, especially since I am a 24/7 caregiver, I find it really adds to enhance silence. For me, silence is where I can most easily lean back away from my thoughts and just be. And I think this line here is what I really loved. When my mind is full of ideas, plans, and intentions, I am certainly not alone. And then she wrote, LOL. But I thought that was an excellent point. You know, this says being alone. And one thing I noticed by reading your journals is you guys understood those two words differently. Some people understood being as the noun, you know, like awareness, alone, consciousness, alone, being alone, that thing alone, right? Being alone shines and rejoices as awareness. But some of you understood this as being alone, like not being with other people, right? Being alone. I'm not exactly sure which way Rayla understood it, but either way, you do not have being alone, right? The consciousness alone. You do not have being alone when you're full of ideas, plans, and intentions. And I think the second way is the way she understood it, being alone, like being by myself. You're not being alone when you're with all of these ideas, plans, and intentions, right? So whichever way she understood this, I thought this was a great understanding of it. You're not being alone with a head full of ideas, plans, and intentions. So that's what I wanted to bring in and share from Rayla's. And again, if anybody has anything to say, now's a good time. I'm going to go look at Andy, quote 33. Okay, so he has the quote here, forced to review again. Being alone shines and rejoices as awareness. Hence, till all thought merges in absolute being awareness, the poor conceptual mind can never know true being, supreme awareness. So Andy writes, the limitations of the mind keep it from knowing awareness. Now listen to this part. I just love this. The mind is a tool to interact with the world of illusion. And Inner Ramana told us this too, that it was through the mind that we're able to even see an illusion. So the mind is a tool to interact with the world of illusion. It is like the virtual reality headset that allows you to play your virtual reality games. When you have your headset on and all of your attention is focused on the perceptions that the headset feeds you, it is difficult to focus on what lies outside the headset. When you remove the headset, you can know what lies beyond it. When you can bypass the poor conceptual mind and all the distractions it feeds you, you can know what lies beyond it. Look beyond the mind. And I don't know if each of y'all have had the chance yet to play virtual reality. I actually did it many years before it was on the public market as a game. Back when I was in the military, I got to be with some contractors who were building virtual reality for military purposes, and I got to try it on. It's a whole new world. And you're right, the world around you is lost. Like there were other people around with their security badges, you know, other people watching me while I was in this virtual reality world. But once I was in the virtual reality world, I wasn't really aware of the people around me with their security badges. If they were walking around, looking at me, taking notes, I didn't know what they were doing. In order to see what they were doing, I had to take that mask back off again, right? And so that's really what the mind is like. When the mind is on and we're engaged in the mind, we're not at all aware of reality. In order to be aware of reality, we have to take the mind off, which is, again, what is what meditation is all about. It's very difficult. You can be aware of awareness to a certain degree when you're walking around in the world, but you can't take the mind off because the mind is what allows you to see the world. You know, the world is the virtual reality. You have to have that mind on in order to interact with the world. So if you really want to see reality, you have to take time to close your eyes, go into meditation, practice awareness, watching awareness, to the point that you literally take the mind off. You're forgetting the world entirely, and you're focusing on just the being alone. Right, which is how this quote started. Being alone shines and rejoices as awareness. You have to be with just that, just the being. So I thought that was an excellent example to help us see how important, again, this meditation is. So thank you very much, Andy, for sharing that. If there's anyone else who has anything to share, now's a great time. All right, we're running out of time. I may not get through all the notes I took this week, but obviously you can tell I've enjoyed reading your journals. If you have your book, let's go to quote 36. Holding in their hands the mirror, the scripture which declares the self alone is to be known. Many, alas, study with care the text and commentaries. Only few seek the self and gain true life. Again, last week we commented on how we had read in the introduction to the Seven Steps to Awakening when Michael Langford mentioned that only one in a million awaken. And I mentioned that a couple of y'all commented on that, you know, only one in a million. And that sometimes people, the attitude is, well, why should I even try then? Well, this actually tells you exactly why only one in a million awaken. Because only few seek the self. That's why. There's really only one in a million even trying. I mean, there may be lots of people reading spiritual teachings and listening to spiritual teachers and talking about spiritual stuff and getting in spiritual debates, but there's only a few that are actually closing their eyes every day and trying to find the self. That's why only one in a million make it. Right? That's important to know. What's important to know is that you can, if you decide to be one of the one in a million who try. In fact, what teachers like Nisargadatta and Ramana Maharshi tell us is that if you actually try to seek the self, you can't not find it. You can't not wake up. Remember Jesus? Seek and ye shall find. Knock and the door will be opened. They didn't say seek and one in a million of you will find it. Right? Knock and occasionally the door opens. That's not the problem. The problem is that most spiritual seekers aren't actually seeking. They're becoming educated. So that's what I wanted to share about that particular quote. We have 3 minutes left. Let's see if there's something else here I can get in before we run out of time. Let's just go to quote 42, because I have it written here. We can look at it. Where thoughts cease, happiness reigns supreme. Such is the truth about happiness. Although the thought-free state is gained and happiness is experienced for a while, such a thought-free state obtained by contact with external objects does not last long. Therefore, it is clear that one can never achieve the thought-free, happy state permanently with the help of the five senses. So what this is referring to is you can experience temporary happiness in the world. For example, let's say you bite into the, what kind of a dessert do you guys love? What's a really favorite dessert? Somebody just yell out something to me.
Cheesecake.
Okay. So let's say you bite into a piece of cheesecake that is by far the best cheesecake you have ever tasted. In fact, have you guys seen that Friends episode where they keep stealing the cheesecake from the old lady next door because it's so good? Right? It's just the best cheesecake in the world. Absolutely. When you are eating that cheesecake, when you close your eyes and it's like, you are so happy in the moment you're eating that cheesecake. However, it's not true. Just like you're never upset for the reason you think, you're actually never happy for the reason you think. That's what this quote is all about. Why are you happy? Because while you're sitting there with that piece of cheesecake in your mouth, being fully in the moment, enjoying it, you're not thinking. That's why you're happy. You're not thinking. Where thoughts cease, happiness reigns supreme. Such is the truth about happiness. If you're watching your grandchildren be so cute and you're just paying attention to them, you feel so happy, it's not your grandchildren making you happy. It's that in the moment you're watching their cute little facial expressions and they're listening to their beautiful giggles, you're not thinking. You're happy because you chose not to think. You allowed yourself not to think. Your grandchildren could be just as cute, and if you're sitting there worrying about something, you're not happy. It has nothing to do with them, as cute as they are. And in fact, I think Kate wrote something like that. I think I was going to read that, and I'm not going to get to it, but I think Kate wrote something about that in her journal. So I think that's where I'm going to have to end today. There were a few more things I was going to point out, but we're out of time. But just remember that the truth about happiness is when you're not thinking. It's not the activity. It's not the relationship. It's not any of the things that you think make you happy. It's the not thinking. And if you realize that, you might seek not thinking more, right? Okay, you guys, have a wonderful week. I'll be paying attention to your journals, and I'll see you next week. Thanks for everything. All the gifts I shared today came from you. Thank you.